Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Anthony Wright, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, yes. Winter apparently has arrived in Israel. There was the first snowfall yesterday on the Hermon, and temperatures have certainly become a little lower. Some rain, even stormy weather, winds blowing across Israel. There was a tree apparently that fell on a shul in Rosh Ha'ayin. And there was a woman who was also injured by a falling tree, I understand, in Jerusalem. So a little bit of stormy weather and certainly a lot cooler. The first snowfalls have come. The rain so far has been relatively sparse. We're already in the middle of December and hardly had any good rainfall to speak of. But certainly over the last day or two, we've seen a little more rain and more is forecast for the future. So it seems as if the winter has finally arrived in Israel in the middle of December, very, very late.
Right, absolutely. Defense Minister Benny Gantz has traveled to Washington for talks with American officials. This does seem to be heating up, doesn't it?
It is definitely heating up. And initially, the talk was that he is going to discuss the talks that are going on at the moment in Vienna between the U.S. and Iran with regard to the possibility of the U.S. rejoining the Iranian nuclear agreement that the Trump administration withdrew the United States from. We understand that those talks are not going particularly well. So one wondered what it was that Benny Gantz was going to talk about when, in fact, the talks are not really progressing well. But U.S. officials have now said that, in fact, the reason that Benny Gantz is in America is to discuss with U.S. officials possible military drills to prepare for an attack on Iran. So this is now moving from the talking stage to potentially doing military exercises, joint military exercises between Israel and the United States to somehow take action, potentially destroy some of the Iranian nuclear facilities in what the newspapers are calling a potential worst case scenario. Some people might think it might be a best case scenario rather than a worst case scenario. U.S. officials are much more open now about the fact that this is a real problem, and that the Iranian nuclear program has gone beyond a point which gives it any conventional rationale. That was a quote that was given to Reuters. In fact, the quote went, "We're in a pickle because Iran's nuclear program is advancing to a point beyond which it has any conventional rationale." So that's a quote by a U.S. official, an unnamed U.S. official, given to Reuters, which is a real admission of the fact that the Iranian nuclear program is really progressed to a point where things are getting out of control, a little bit dangerous, to the point where the U.S. government is and the U.S. defense military is willing to hold potential drills, exercises with Israel to attack Iranian nuclear facilities. So this is, I think, a very, very significant moment. And if indeed those military drills do go ahead, I think that that will show an entire change in the Biden administration's view of trying to get back into the Iranian nuclear agreement almost at any price. That was at least the way that the Biden administration started out their time in office, by saying, we really want to get back in. We want to try and somehow get involved in creating some control over the Iranian nuclear program. But I think what we've known for some time, and which I think the American officials are now willing to admit more openly, is that even when you are in that nuclear agreement and Iran promises you the world in terms of controls and access and limits on what they do in their nuclear program, there is too much that's going on beneath the surface, which is not visible and which is not under control and which is not subject to the agreement, the terms of the agreement, which means that really the agreement is not worth very much, because too much activity is going on outside of the agreement, so-called unbeknown to the parties to the agreement in a kind of secret way. So Benny Gantz will be meeting with U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. He will be meeting with Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He will also be meeting with other U.S. military officials. There were no further details given about who he will meet with and what the potential preparations could be. But I think that this is quite a significant moment, this particular visit that Benny Gantz is paying to the U.S. To talk action rather than words.
The fact that they're announcing these drills, doesn't that cast a little bit of suspicion on it? I mean, do they need to make it public? Is it maybe just messaging, perhaps messaging to Iran that we're taking this much more seriously than in the past? Otherwise, why would they need to announce this? Why would they need to tell us about it?
Yeah, so clearly there's a message being sent here. Clearly there's something that's being transmitted to the Iranian regime. I think that these messages are quite carefully cast in order to try to make a certain point. I agree that in the most part, military drills you would expect to be undertaken in secret, and I'm suspecting that most of the military drills will be undertaken in secret. In fact, if you ask me, it wouldn't surprise me if some of the drills have already taken place without us knowing about it. So I think that there's a lot going on in secret, but slowly but surely, and against the backdrop of those talks in Vienna, which seem to be faltering, I think that the message is definitely being delivered in an entirely different way.
It would certainly seem that way. Israel sees a rise in the number of coronavirus cases. What's going on in Israel?
So not a massive rise, but there certainly has been a rise in the last day or two. Some people are attributing it to the fact that all the school children had to go through these tests, and that some of these tests may well have then come through as positive without people actually knowing about it. There have been quite a number of cases that I've heard about of people who've been diagnosed with COVID-19 as a result of having been forced to do a test because they were traveling or for other external reasons rather than undertaking a test because they didn't feel very well. And I think that this might well be the case with the children all having been tested, and so a lot more virus carriers having been identified, which shows that the whole idea of testing the children was worthwhile. There was something to it if so many of them were diagnosed. And in fact, out of the last few days, something like 48% of the new cases diagnosed are attributed to children between the ages of 5 and 11, which brings me to the point about the vaccinations that have now been authorized for children of that age, and the fact that only about 10% of the children in Israel have actually taken up on the vaccine in that particular age group. So it's a relatively low uptake, and one wonders whether these tests and the number of children who've been diagnosed with COVID-19 preschool might well incentivize parents to be convinced to get their children vaccinated. Lots and lots of surveys about, you know, who is vaccinated and which age groups and what percentages, which, you know, is all just part of the, I think we're getting a sort of an over supply of data these days. I think the most important thing in Israel right now is that the so-called R rate, the reproduction rate, has fluctuated over the last while between 1 and 1.1, which means that we are sort of almost on the verge of the virus actually growing in numbers, because all the time that the R number is more than one, it means that there are more and more people who are being diagnosed. On the other hand, when we look at the number of serious cases in Israel, that is now dropping down to around 100 serious cases. So it means our hospitals are in relatively good shape. I think the vaccine has been doing its job pretty well in preventing those people who have been diagnosed preventing them from having the need to get hospital treatment, to avail themselves of a more serious treatment. And so the hospitals, I think, are in pretty good shape. Officially, up until now, only 21 cases of the Omicron variant have been formally diagnosed. There are a number of people who have been suspected of having Omicron who have not been formally diagnosed, but what the government has decided to do is to extend the quarantine period for those who have been diagnosed with Omicron to 14 days. And this comes on the back of scientific evidence that the Omicron variant stays infectious for longer in other previous variants. And so the government said, if you are now diagnosed with Omicron, 14 days in quarantine for you, and there will be no opportunity to shorten that, even though tests will be required towards the end of your quarantine period. And the other thing that has come out is that the government is thinking about taking away entirely the three-day quarantine period that's currently in place for all Israelis returning from abroad. There will be the requirement still to take a test on the third day after having returned, but no requirement to stay in quarantine during that period. So I'm guessing that this quarantine hasn't really been particularly helpful in bringing forward cases of people who've traveled abroad. We'll be watching the space quite carefully to see what rules might be in place going forward about potentially non-Israelis coming to Israel. But there's certainly no talk at the moment of opening up borders to tourists, to people who are not Israeli citizens.
Mm. In terms of people who are getting permission to come into Israel, and we are hearing about a number of people under special circumstances that are, why would that quarantine period be any different to Israelis returning or non-Israelis returning?
I'm not exactly sure what the current quarantine period requirements are for tourists to get special permission to come here. But I'm assuming that they will only be allowed to come here, assuming that they've been vaccinated, that they can provide evidence of their vaccines and things like that. I think that the Israeli government is taking a slightly different view on Israelis who've been vaccinated in Israel as opposed to people who've been vaccinated abroad. And even though the vaccines are the same, we kind of a little bit less reliant upon records, because we don't know to what extent records might be fabricated. There might be a little bit of a market of people bringing in false vaccine certificates. And so I think there's a little bit of reticence about relying too much on vaccine information that comes from abroad as opposed to vaccine information that they have here internally, because they don't have to rely on it, what's being presented by the traveler. They have it internally within the health system. We know exactly who's been vaccinated and with what. So I think that that's just where the slight difference comes in.
Right. And finally, an Israeli woman was stabbed in front of her young children in Jerusalem yesterday.
Yeah.
All in the name of peace, right?
It's just an ongoing story of another incident. I mean, we've had quite a number of incidents this week, a stabbing at the Damascus Gate last weekend, the ramming incident of the security guard in Samaria during the week, and now a 26-year-old woman with five children next to her being stabbed in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem. It is a flashpoint in Jerusalem. We know that Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has been a flashpoint. That's the place where and there's been talk about a number of Arab families being evicted from their homes. We've already talked about that. We've seen it go through the courts. And this particular incident of the lady being stabbed, fortunately, she was not seriously injured, even though she was admitted to hospital with a knife still sticking out of her back. But the worst part of the story is that the person who carried out the attack was a 14-year-old teenage girl who apparently is an across-the-road neighbor of the woman who was stabbed. So this is now getting really down into the hood, into the neighborhood of the where people live, and neighbors actually stabbing each other because of this particular flashpoint. So lots of investigations going on into that particular family, that young girl who carried out the attack. Fortunately for now, there is no life endangered, and the lady who was stabbed has already been released from hospital. But it just kind of is a cycle of violence that we can't seem to escape from. And it's a little bit sad for me that that's what I have to leave with you, Howard, before you head off on your holiday. But I hope that you have a good time, a well-earned rest. I know that everybody will miss you, including me and the listeners. We're looking forward to having you back rested and refilled with new energies.
Absolutely. Any more energy and I think they won't know what to do with me. Either way, Anthony Reich, thank you. And thank you for an incredible year of reporting. I'm handing you over to Chad Thomas, who you'll be in very, very good hands. No doubt have many interesting conversations with him. And I will see you in January. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It has gone 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning.